Full Service Radio is supported by Compass, the future of real estate in the Metro DC area and beyond. Discover more at compass.com.
You're tuned into Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service Radio.
Welcome to Beer Me on Full Service Radio, broadcasting live from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. I'm your host, Sarah Jane. I live, work, and I love beer here in D.C. During my time in culinary school, I acquired an appreciation for good beer. I continued my studies in beer at grad school at NYU, and since then I have been a beer director, beer consultant, beer bar general manager. But I get to continue to explore this wonderful world of beer with you wonderful listeners. Every week, I will have a different guest from different parts of the beer world, brewers, importers, educators, to really help us explore this fascinating and dynamic world. Whether you are new to beer or a seasoned professional, we will have something for you. Today, we're talking about home brewing, the wonderful science experiment that your college roommate had in your closet. I am joined today, very, very lucky to be talking to the DC Homebrewers Club. So we have Sarah Benault, I'm sorry, your last name?
Bondioli.
Bondioli, Sarah Bondioli, current president of the DC Homebrewers Club, Bob Rouse from also the DC Homebrewers Club, former president from 2013 to 2015, and Maddie Marshall, the current treasurer and secretary of the DC Homebrewers Club. Thank you all for taking time on your Monday morning to come talk with us.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, of course. So tell me a little bit about the DC Homebrewers Club. I know that you just celebrated your 10-year anniversary. Tell me a little about what you guys do.
Yeah, so the club was started in 2008 by two brothers, actually, in D.C. who were just kind of interested in getting a group of people together to explore homebrewing a bit more. And so we celebrated our 10th anniversary in January with an event, a meeting we had at Right Proper Brewery in D.C. And basically our general premise is that we just get homebrewers together. We meet once a month and share beer, homebrew with each other, talk about it. And then we also do other events, homebrew demos and competitions. We host like a homebrew barbecue once a year. So things like that.
Nice. So we were talking a little bit before we got started. What does your typical meeting look like? What are you typically doing?
We get a lot of people showing up. We probably have a core group of people that come every meeting. They're really dedicated to the club. And then we always have new people coming or people that come every once in a while. But we spend most of the time trying each other's beer, which is always fun.
Yeah.
But
for educational purposes.
Of course. Mm-hmm. Part of that process is exchanging ideas, techniques, tips, asking for help, especially newer brewers. They can learn a lot at a homebrew club meeting, you know, things that they might be doing wrong, things that they're doing right that they're not sure about. So it's we are an educational club. That's sort of our purpose, but we also have a lot of fun too.
Nice. And what does I mean, there's membership dues, I'm assuming, or
no dues. Have a annual barbecue fundraiser, and that pretty much you know, keeps our website afloat and any general expenses that we have. But we're a pretty simple, welcome to everybody kind of club.
Yeah, no requirements or anything like that?
No, if you haven't even brewed before, you can show up and try to figure out how to start.
Very cool. So how long have, Sarah, how long have you been brewing?
So I've been brewing about 6 years now.
Okay. And Maddie?
About 4 years now.
All right. Bob?
11 years.
11 years. Okay. So we have some seasoned professionals here. What have some of your other members? I mean, I'm assuming you all have day jobs, but you know, have some members kind of transitioned fully into the world of craft beer?
Yeah, we've had a number of members who have gone on to beer careers. So we probably have close to 10 people who've gone out and like opened their own breweries. A couple people are, we actually have two current members who are working on a brewery that's supposed to be opening sometime later this year. So Michael Tonsmeyer and Scott Janish mm-hmm. are owning Sapwood Cellars, which is opening up in Maryland.
Oh, nice.
And Mike and Scott actually both, in addition to doing a lot of homebrewing, have very active brewing blogs that have pretty big followings. Mm-hmm. And so they kind of have some built-in excitement already from people who are following those. Scott does a lot of work with hops and experimenting with hops and beers, and Mike specifically has done a lot of work with sour beers.
Okay, very cool. Do they have like an ETA on the, I mean, I know it's like asking
not,
a restaurant.
Yeah,
owner,
I'm not sure.
When are
exactly
we opening a restaurant in Washington, D.C.?
I think they're hoping for like summer-ish. But
summer-ish?
I don't know
okay.
exactly how that's going to fall.
Very cool. Well, keep your eyes peeled. All right, so we have three seasoned homebrewing professionals. Let's say I have no experience in homebrewing. I want to get started. What advice are you giving me?
Come to a DC Homebrewer Club meeting.
All right. Step one. Okay.
Admit that it's not as complicated as you probably have in your head. Like,
okay.
I remember I put off doing it for the longest time because I was like, this is going to be so complicated and I'm going to need all this equipment and I'm going to screw all this up. And really, actually, once I did it, I was like, oh, if I know how to bake a cake, I know how to make a beer. I just need, you know, a couple of the right tools, got a kit, showed up to the homebrewer meeting, and it kind of went from there. So if someone wants to get started, I mean, it's really a simple matter of getting a kit or getting the basic materials, you know, basic equipment that you need, and just going for it.
Nice. So as far as the kits go, I looked around a little bit. They've definitely come a long way. You know, you can get your typical, 5-gallon kit, or
yeah.
you can get,
mm-hmm.
you know, like a little 1-gallon kit. You know, where is there like a particular spot that you all recommend to pick this up, or just kind of anywhere? It doesn't matter.
Well, as we mentioned, we were talking before we started recording here, there are about 3 to 4 homebrew shops in the DC area. So, mm-hmm. Three Stars Brewing in DC has a homebrew shop with it.
That's always my favorite, because you can go and get a beer as you're sitting around trying to pick out what hops you want.
Down in Virginia, there's the Brew Shop mm-hmm. in Arlington. And
it's my little homebrew shop in Falls Church. They also sell beer, and they have some beers on tap as well. And then if you're in Maryland, there's also Maryland Homebrew up in Columbia.
Okay, nice. Now, do you all recommend kind of a smaller, like a 1-gallon starter kit or a 5-gallon kit? Or does it matter?
There are so many different ways to start out. Mm-hmm. I think that's one of the things that people don't realize, is there are like lots of options. So when I got going, I started by doing 1-gallon all-grain batches. And all-grain just means you're starting from the actual grain and extracting the sugar from the grain. The other kind of term that we use for a way of brewing is like an extract batch. And that's where you would start with either a powder or a syrup form of where the sugar has basically already been extracted from the grain, and so you're starting with a powder or sugar of that powder or syrup of that sugar.
Okay.
So I started doing all grain, but 1 gallon, so pretty small batches. I was living in a 1-bedroom apartment. Although now I've like ramped up, and I went from 1-gallon batches to 3-gallon batches, and now to 5-gallon batches usually. And I still live in a 1-bedroom apartment, so it's possible to like do large batches even in a small space. Just depends a little bit on what your space is like. But a lot of people actually do get started with extract because it's a little bit faster and there are fewer variables.
Okay.
Yeah, that's how I got started for sure, because it's just a lot less things can go wrong. And you can actually make really good beer with extract. Like, I mm-hmm. think everyone feels like you have to go big or go home, but you don't. Especially at the meetings, like trying different beers, it's always like, whoa, this is an extract beer? Like, this is incredible. You know, it's a, you know, so I don't think it's something people should shy away from. Like, I started with a kit. My roommate at the time actually got a kit for Hanukkah, and so we were like, oh, we're finally going to brew our beer. Had no idea what we were doing. You know, we were taking the hydrometer and, like, trying it, which is what you put in the the beer, and mm-hmm. as it floats, you can measure the density, and that's how you figure out the alcohol content. We had no idea about that, so we're like putting it in like a thermometer, and we're like, why isn't it working? Like, we don't understand. And from there, then just went to like the homebrew shops, like, hey, we want to make a amber. How do we do that? And just, you know, the people who work at the homebrew shops are like the nicest people, and there's what's cool about homebrewing. There's no judgment. If like you want to learn something, no one's going to be like, you don't know how to do that? Like, that doesn't happen.
Right.
People are just super excited to like share their knowledge and get you into, you know, into brewing. So just kind of going to the shops like, oh, hey, you should do this. And then, you know, just like baking a cake, as you learn what everything does, you're like, oh, well, then I can add this and I can add this and I can switch that out for this type of hop and, you know, figuring it out. But, you know, extract kit is, you know, definitely a great way to get started.
Yeah, that's how I started too. I got... at the homebrew shops, they'll have a like essentially a starter equipment kit,
mm-hmm.
And it's usually around $100, $70 to $100, depends on you know, what all is in it. But it's usually all the stuff that you need. Beyond that, if you have some big stock pot at home and some cooking utensils, you're good to go.
Yeah.
And so yeah, I started out with 5 gallons, with a few kits. You know, got the extract kits, got those under my belt, and then I got some confidence. You know, when it turned out, it's like, hey, this is pretty good. I made this. Wow. and then from there, you know, I just, you know, kept going. I started actually creating my own recipes and stuff. And I agree with Maddie. You can brew excellent beer with extract. I think it gets there are certain snobs that look down on it, but I've won, you know, ribbons in homebrew competitions with extract beers. So
nice.
You can make excellent beers that way.
And Sarah, you had mentioned that, you know, a lot more can go wrong with doing grain. Mm-hmm. Can you all break that down a little bit for some listeners who are newer to brewing?
There's basically just you're starting with a few more variables. So you need to successfully extract the sugars you want from that grain mm-hmm. in order to have the right sugars to turn it into beer. And so... if you didn't have like the right mix of grains, you need, you know, grains that are going to give you enough sugar to get your beer, some alcohol in your beer in the end.
Yeah.
Or, if you basically put those grains into, we call a mash, but mm-hmm. it's basically you're like steeping grains in hot water, kind of like making tea. But if your temperature is off too much on that, there's like a certain temperature range for the beer. Depending on what you're making, that you kind of want that to steep at. So if your temperature is way off, you might end up not really extracting the sugars that you need out of that, and therefore it can affect the body of the beer, it can affect how much alcohol you end up with in the end, things like that. So if you start with extract, you don't have to worry about all those variables, and you start with the sugars.
Yeah, there's nothing worse than having a, you know, you get your grain going and you put the thermometer and you're like, oh, I'm 4 degrees too low, and having to boil water and throw it in and hope, and it just kind of becomes a becomes a mess at some point. And it's more equipment, but, you know, you kind of get more control out of what your final beer tastes like.
Sure. Yeah. I think the temperature aspect of it is probably the most critical point. If you mm-hmm. know, like you said, 4 degrees difference can make a beer either too dry or too sweet. And, you know, that's something that's hard to adjust once your water's in the grain. You know, your only option is to put cold water in or hot water in, or if you have, you know, nicer setup, you can do like recirculating and adjust the temperature that way. So,
all right. So we've got come to a homebrew meeting. Don't be scared.
Don't be scared.
Go to a local homebrew shop. They're all nice. In mm-hmm. fact, most people in beer are nice.
Yes.
Beauty of the community.
Yes.
What's like a good first style for someone to kind of try to tackle?
I'm going to say whatever your favorite style is.
Okay.
I think English ales are easy and very forgiving. You know, you can... If it's a little too sweet or a little too dry, it doesn't really matter. And it's not super hoppy, so... You know, you can make some mistakes and they'll still turn out pretty good.
I'm going to say pretty much anything other than like a lager, which is a completely different type of brewing process because the yeast is different. But any type of ale, an amber ale, a porter, a, you know, IPA, a pale ale, whatever, you know, you want to drink. Like mm-hmm. if you're going to make a style that you don't like, then you're not going to want to drink your own homebrew, right? Like
sure.
That's fair.
I concur with everything they said. Sometimes I'll recommend IPAs because you can, like, to some extent, if you have a lot of hops in there, you can kind of cover up some other possible off flavors you could get.
Yeah.
So like IPAs can sometimes help, you can still like enjoy it even if there's something a little off in there.
That's fair. All right. Good advice all around. So when you all, you know, first started brewing or kind of as you got more confident, I'm looking for an epic fail story. I know at some point someone messed up and there was
like
something.
We all probably have one or two of them.
I think what I would consider my, I mean, there have been multiple things, but probably the biggest one was, so it's possible when you are making beer and then bottling it and you're carbonating the beer in the bottle, basically, mm-hmm. it's possible to over-carbonate to the point that your bottles start exploding.
Ah, okay.
So
which is extremely dangerous.
Yes.
An entirely new definition of popping bottles.
Definitely want to avoid that. Okay. But I did have that happen once. Luckily for me, this is probably like my third or fourth batch. So I was doing 1 gallon still, so I only had like 8 bottles total. But they were in like kind of foam cooler closed up in my living room. Okay. But I wasn't around when it happened because I clearly would have heard it if I had been around. But when I went to like check on them at some point, I'm like, oh, there's liquid in the bottom and shards of glass all over. And so then immediately like went brought them all in the kitchen and very carefully like opened all of them and they gushed all over the place. Because it can be dangerous too as you're trying to do that if another one explodes. That's okay. You know, yeah. Not a good situation to be in. But so that was probably my biggest like obvious fail in that.
And hey, you're unscathed. I'm looking at your face. No scars. You survived.
And then I was just a little more careful after that about like how much you basically add a little sugar as you're bottling. And so I was probably not as carefully measuring the amount of sugar I was adding as I maybe could have been. And so that I learned from it, and I was very careful after that. So,
well, we're going to take a very quick break. We'll be right back. Maddie, Bob, you're not safe from epic fail stories.
Today's program has been brought to you by Compass. Looking for a more curated real estate experience? With the mindset of a startup and the sophistication of a luxury brand, Compass is the future of real estate, changing the way agents and their clients navigate the process of finding or selling a home. Visit them today in DC, Maryland, or Virginia, or navigate compass.com day or night. Music you're hearing is by Kido, K-I-E-D-O. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Beer Me. I'm your host, Sarah Jane, and we are recording live at the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. I'm joined today with the D.C. Homebrewers Club, Sarah, Bob, and Maddie, all here giving us some tips about kind of getting started on homebrewing. Go to a meeting. But we are sharing some epic fail stories when brewing can take a turn. So it's your turn, Maddie.
Uh-oh. Well, besides not knowing exactly what I was doing when I was starting off and hydrometers and everything, I remember when I had started all grain, which is basically extracting the sugars from the, original barley, and probably my third batch, I was getting all excited, and I love personally rye ales. So, like any type of like super rye IPA, mm-hmm. Is probably my favorite. So, what's the point of homebrew if you're not gonna like overdo it on your favorite kind of style? And I wanted to go like I think it was like a 15% or 20% rye beer, which is like a big Bob's face is it's a most commercial brews are only like maybe 5 or 10% at the max. So I was going to go all out with the rye. And what I didn't know, because I was an inexperienced homebrewer, and I should have asked someone at a meeting before I did it, is most grain, when you mill it, there's a hull around the outside of it. So mm-hmm. it kind of keeps it kind of floating because it's not just a pure grain. There's a hull in there to kind of keep the water around it okay. Well, rye doesn't have that, so you have to add rice hulls to kind of keep it from becoming a really stuck, sticky mash, to kind of keep some separation. I had no idea. And I brew this beer, and it gets completely stuck. Like, it's such a mess of of rye that it wouldn't even come out of the my mash tun. So I completely stuck, and I'm trying, like, well, if I walk in and I'm like putting on gloves because it's like 154 degree mash tun, and I'm trying to get it out, I end up completely spilling it all over my kitchen floor.
Aww.
Sticky sugar water is basically what I made, and that doesn't clean up very well. I lost the beer entirely, but then the next time I made it, it's pretty good. So
nice. So again, go to a meeting.
Go to a meeting. Ask someone about it.
All right, Bob, what do you got for us?
I'll second what she said. I did the same thing with pumpkin in the mash,
yeah. Okay.
which is goopy and rye and a bunch of other grains, and yeah, it turned into a dough ball.
Yep.
But I think I've had the same problems that they've had.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm going to go with something different, I brew outside on like a turkey fryer type of thing.
Okay.
And so I've got this water filter, so I'm thinking the water filter is taking out all the chlorine and getting nice, clean, pure water going in. I bought a new garden hose. And you don't notice it in the smell when you're brewing, but it picked up a lot of plasticky flavor and aroma out of that brand new garden hose. And by the time you find out, when the beer is all done and you're trying it for the first time, it's too late. And it was disgusting.
of garden hose.
I mean, I don't know if when you were a little kid, you used to drink water out of the garden hose.
Yeah.
That's what the beer tasted like.
Oh, no.
And so, yeah, that's 5 gallons down the drain.
I gotcha. And that's too strong of an aroma for any nostalgia points there.
Yeah. No, I ended up taking a bottle to the homebrew club meeting and tried to see who could guess what the problem was.
So you bring your failures as well.
Yeah, I do. Sometimes I call them, lesson beers.
Beers. Okay, I like
so,
that.
So, this is a failure, and either try to get people to figure out, what went wrong, or tell them what went wrong and say, this is what happens when you do this or when you don't do that.
Okay.
And, there's lessons to be learned from failure. I think everyone can agree to that.
Oh, yeah. This is how we transition beer into life lessons.
Beer is life.
That's a good. I like that. So kind of getting away from the actual nuts and bolts of home brewing, I want to talk a little bit about hops, not the beautiful plant that gives beer flavor. Homebrew Outreach Participation Sisterhood. Can we talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So this is basically a kind of subgroup that some of us began, maybe 4 years ago now?
I think so.
It's been a little while. What it is it's basically just focused on encouraging women to get into homebrewing and to make it a little more accessible. So it started from the fact that I went to my first meeting about 6 years ago, and when I walked into, it was a meeting that was actually hosted at someone's house. I walked into their house. I didn't know anybody there, and it was like a house full of 50 guys and like 5 women, maybe.
Yeah.
And, I had a great time. Obviously, I came back. Like, it was still amazing, but it felt a little awkward. And I also, was kind of surprised. It hadn't even occurred to me until then that there are so many more men involved in brewing, or at least visibly in brewing, than women. And so a few of the women who were involved at that time, then we kind of decided it might be fun to start a little women's group that could meet and do brew days and things where, if you were a little intimidated about not knowing anything and going into a den of men, essentially, that you could come to this women's group and brew with us and learn the basics and then get a little more confident.
Okay.
And kind of go out and start doing your own thing, and then hopefully also join our larger club as well, but just to kind of introduce people to it.
Can I throw my fellow men under the bus for
a
moment?
Always, of course.
I think it was really a necessary thing, because I will concur with Sarah that a woman at a homebrew club was automatically assumed to be a wife or girlfriend of a brewer, not a brewer themselves. Yeah. And which is wrong. Mm-hmm. And I think that emphasizing, women as brewers, I think was important and necessary. And so I applaud, you know, Sarah and everyone else that got that ball rolling.
And yeah. I do think it has helped overall. Like, I feel like we have more women who are brewers who are involved in the club, and that I think members are like used to talking to us as brewers, which is nice.
Yeah. It was nice at the our 10th anniversary meeting. I'm mm-hmm. looking around. I'm like, man, there's a lot of women here. Like, this is great. Yeah. Like, it's, I don't know, like, as craft beer in general has, mm-hmm. has gotten bigger, I feel like more and more women are, you know, being represented or getting into craft beer. And I'm not sure it's the same amount, you know, same percentage getting into homebrewing, but I feel like it should be.
Yeah.
And so it's just kind of really nice to now walk into a meeting and not assume that I'm with somebody.
I can't tell you how many times I've gone up to a table in a beer bar restaurant that I worked at and, hey, can I speak to your beer guy? And I've had to, unfortunately, tell them, I am that guy. I am your beer guy for this evening. And being met with looks of disappointment is just wow. heartbreaking.
Yeah.
But hey, we're getting there.
We're getting
one,
there.
One beer at a time. So how many people typically show up to the hops meeting?
We've tended to vary over the years, being sometimes a little more active and sometimes a little less active. Mm-hmm. So it tends to be a pretty small group, like maybe 6 to 12 total. We've tended to do brew days a decent amount, which I think is something that works out pretty well. Because of the size of the group we have, it's not too many people to kind of brew together, which if we did brew days with all of our DC Homebrewers Club meetings, it's just too many people to yeah. really like get involved in that. But with kind of a small group, we can do a brew day where everyone can kind of be involved mm-hmm. and take home some of the beer in the end. We've also over the years done kind of happy hours where we've had women in the beer industry come and talk to us. So professional brewers, also beer bar owners, beer writers. So kind of just a variety of hanging out with women in the industry who are cool and can kind of talk about their experiences and how they got to where they are.
Nice. No, it's very empowering. And you, I mean, you said it's kind of morphed over the years. You're seeing more and more women getting involved.
Oh, yeah, definitely. There's, and especially with hops, it's kind of nice because it's this community where, and especially DC, such a transient city mm-hmm. that I think people come, and especially women, of like, I don't really know anybody, but I'm kind of into this, and I don't know how to show up into a, you know, a den of men and talk. So it's kind of nice to be able to bring in people that, you know, otherwise might be intimidated, but it's a smaller group. Or like, I've hosted brew days before, and it's like, all right, everyone bring an empty six pack, and you know, next meeting everyone gets to take a little bit of our shared beer home. So it's just kind of nice to be, you know, with a group of ladies drinking beer.
Nice. Yeah. So when is the next meeting for the DC Beer Club?
The next DC Homebrewers meeting is March 28th at Gordon Biersch at Navy Yard.
Okay.
7 p.m.
All right. And when do you guys have another meeting for hops?
I don't think we have a specific meeting planned yet.
Okay.
For the next one on that.
But we have a cool Facebook group.
Yes.
So if there are any ladies interested, you should join our Facebook group.
Yes.
Check out the Facebook
Hops
group.
Hops has a Facebook group. Also, DC Homebrewers has a Facebook group as well, which is active both for, you know, meeting info and events info, but also it's a great place to get questions answered if you are a brewer, whether or not you make it out to a meeting. We have a lot of people on there who are active and willing to answer questions, and people who ask questions about all different aspects of brewing, kegging, all those things.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I actually got started with All Grain through the Facebook group because okay. I was doing extract and I wasn't really sure how to do All Grain, and I didn't really know anyone well enough to be like, hey. So I just posted on Facebook like, hey, is anyone doing an All Grain brew soon, and can I come hang out with you for a couple hours and watch how it's done? I had to have like a dozen people be like, yeah, I'm touring this weekend, come on by. And the person I ended up going to is now like one of my closest friends, so like it's kind of a nice little group.
That's awesome. Well, check out a meeting, join the Facebook group, both of them. And thank you all so much for coming by and chatting with us. It was Wonderful to have you all in the studio this morning.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us. Yeah. This has been Beer Me, recorded live at the Line Hotel. We're here every Monday at 11 a.m. My name is Sarah Jane. Check us out on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and info@fullserviceradio.org. Thank you all very much.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter @FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook @FullServiceRadio. Thanks for listening.